Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
And that's why I believe in you, because that is the greatest purpose. It's to love. Honest. It sounds corny, whatever you want to say. I don't care. I love people because there is freedom and power in loving people.
Hello, all you positive heads out there. Thanks for tuning your beautiful brainwaves into another episode of the Positive Head Podcast, where we have the crazy belief that creating success and happiness is a daily conscious effort, which is why we provide you with a fresh serving of soul food for thought 5 days a week. I'm your host, Brandon Beecham, and each and every Wednesday, you can tune in to hear me interview a different consciousness changemaker that is out there working tirelessly to help catalyze change and expand awareness all across spaceship Earth. On the other 4 weekdays, you can tune in to myself and my co-host, Dalian, giving interpretations of our favorite thought-provoking quotes, sharing a bit of inspiring or mysterious news, taking questions from the audience, and digging into any other mind-expansive topics that will help keep your soul fed by tuning you in to positive vibrations on a regular basis. Also, this Positive Head Podcast is definitely a labor of love for Dalian and I, but make no mistake, it takes a lot of time, energy, and resources to produce 5 episodes each and every week for you, our listeners. So if you enjoy the Positive Head Podcast, it would be stellar and much appreciated if you showed us your support at PositiveHead.com by picking up one of our unique Positive Head bracelets. Of course, you would most certainly be helping yourself in the process because it functions as much more than just another stylish accessory. And if you haven't ever seen one, they're really cool, simple little bracelets with our Flower of Life Sacred Geometry inspired logo. They're actually made out of recycled tires and metal, so our intention is, of course, to do something positive by giving new life to previously discarded goods. And as far as their functionality goes, they act as a daily reminder to help you focus on the positive aspects of your daily life. The concept was actually inspired by studies that you can read about on our website. But besides that, many people believe just wearing something with sacred geometry is empowering in and of itself, which you can also read about on our site. And of course, as the Buddha once famously said, what you think you become. So we believe having something on your wrist that reminds you to keep a positive head, the same way a Fitbit reminds you to keep active, makes a whole lot of sense. Of course, we charge way less than Fitbit for helping you to manage your mental health because we let you name your price for your positive head bracelet. The reason we do that is because our heartfelt intention is to spread the positivity at all costs, first and foremost. That is our primary aim. And we don't ever want money to stand in the way of somebody wearing one. So if money is super tight and you want to pay as low as our cost to get one, no problem. On the flip side, if you love our podcast and just hit the lotto and want to show us your support by paying $1 million for one, well, that won't hurt our feelings much either, I assure you. Lastly, we also recently added a unique new line of t-shirts that have what we call chemistry quotes written out on them that help to spread the positivity as well. So head over to PositiveHead.com, check out all our wares, pick something up to show us your support if you feel inclined to do so. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's interview episode, I am excited to have Kim Addis here with me on the show. Kim is the founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and is an expert in helping people to elevate their perspectives to see the bigger picture and the biggest potential and possibilities for their lives. Hello, Kim. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm super happy to be here. Happy to talk to a like-minded friend in the world.
Yes. Isn't it so fun that we can connect like this? You know, lots of distance in between all kinds of amazing people these days is just sort of brought to a halt, and we can connect and talk and help elevate perspectives. You know, it's so great to share. So thank you. Thank you. First question I have for you, I always like to open with. You're in an elevator. You've got 10 floors to answer. Guy next to you looks over and says, what's your passion? What do you say?
helping people transform their lives.
Well, now you got 9 floors left, so.
Well, he says, well, what do you mean by that? And I say, look, I say, here's how it works. The way you think has a greater impact on your outcomes than any other factor in your life. Unfortunately, you have no idea what you're thinking. And so my job is to bring awareness to your thinking so that you can make really, really strategic decisions about what it is that you want in your life and where you want to go.
Love it. Love
it. What floor are we on now?
I think you made it to the 10th. The guy feels pretty good. I think he even asked you for his business, your business card. And
but so let me ask you a question. Have you ever sold anything on an elevator, honestly?
Have I ever sold anything on an elevator? I don't think so. No. Why is it a thing that we think an elevator is the elevator pitch? Yeah, I don't know. Hasn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet. You know, what I like to see happening in an elevator is I check out the other person and I say, wow, I love those shoes.
Totally. Right? You know who has a really good elevator story? I'm not sure if you're familiar with Amy Cuddy. You know, she did a TED Talk. I think it's the second biggest TED Talk to date as far as downloads or plays or what have you. And she, you know, her whole thing is learning to use your posture and speech and everything to how you affect people. And definitely check her out if you haven't. But she has a horror story of being in the elevator with, like, her, you know, someone that she's a huge fan of, you know, mentor person. Ask them, okay, so what's your pitch, you know, kind of thing. She's at some kind of event and she just flubbed it completely. And the two guys in the elevator looked over at her and said, that was the worst elevator pitch we've ever heard. And so she has a really great story. So there, it does happen. It just hasn't happened to you or I yet.
So has she improved her elevator pitch?
Oh, well, I mean, second biggest TED Talk,
you know,
out there. So yeah, it definitely had an impact and she was horrified with speaking and all kinds of things. And so she has a really cool story. I think
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, with the line of work you're in, you definitely got to check her out. You will appreciate it. So speaking of the line of work you're in, coaching, how did you get started doing that?
How did I get started? Okay, so let's start with before I got started. How's that? I used to own a software company and we used to build simulation-based assessments. And the purpose of those assessments was to help companies make better hiring decisions, whether it was for executives or salespeople or any technical position. It didn't really matter. We were looking at what differentiates a top performer from anybody else. And we created these tests to help companies choose who to hire. And we ended up testing hundreds of thousands of people. And what we did was we collected a lot of data, and that data helped us understand what is the commonality that triggers us to understand top performers. What is that common characteristic? And what we discovered was that it didn't matter what industry a person was in. It didn't matter what job they were going for. It didn't matter their educational experience or their personality necessarily. But the single most important characteristic associated with top performance was emotional resilience. So that really was very informing for me, at least, when I thought about starting a coaching business, because I thought, you know, there are all kinds of coaching companies out there. But none of them really focus exclusively on this concept of building emotional resilience. And if you ask me what is emotional resilience exactly, what I'll explain is it's the ability to bounce back from adversity with greater speed and agility. But even something more than that, it's the ability to leverage the adversity, do something good with it, turn it into an advantage. And so we found that people who had that strength, that ability, that natural disposition, that muscle, you could say, were more likely to succeed at extraordinary levels, like at really big, successful levels than others. And so I thought, what if I could build a company that focuses on really examining people's thinking and how their thinking either runs them down or their thinking builds them up and has them building that muscle of emotional resilience. And let me build a company that helps people get strong and handle the adversities that they've experienced in their lives.
I love that. And, you know, I can relate so much to what you're talking about because, and I know you've don't even really know my backstory, but very quick to kind of fill you in, I started a company 5 years ago, vacation management and rental company, from literally on a friend's couch at the time, grew to 100 people. We got last fall to a point where we got an offer from a publicly traded company to be bought out for $30 million. Dollars. Within 12 hours of that, our biggest rental revenue stream was 90% of our revenue is coming through booking.com, you know, the biggest online travel agency. They severed ties with us because they formed a partnership with another, you know, two multi-billion dollar companies got together and we were squashed in the middle. An asteroid hit my business. Then, you know, a bunch of other like really weird things happened with one of my partners. Not positive. And so here I am, you know, 8 months later, I was like, literally, here you go. You've made it to the promised land. Oh, never mind. Within 12 hours, it all explodes. And for me, I've talked about this and share it openly because I think it's actually a beautiful thing. I'm like really grateful for the experience because I know it's making me who I am, and it's going to make the story. It's all about, in my perspective, you know, the lump of coal stays a lump of coal if you continue to look at it from that, through that lens. And I've seen it from an elevated perspective of, oh, this is part of my story. Here's what I'm meant to learn from it. Here's why it's only going to catapult me into this next sort of venture and projects that I've got my hands in with all this potential. Like, wow, it's going to be 10 times bigger. And so it's all just taking that right perspective and making it work for you.
It work for you, and it's being able to make sense of the experience in such a way that you're doing something positive as a result of that experience. And a lot of times we have experiences that don't seem to make sense. Like, they're just plain old hard. They're just plain old painful. Like, you know, yesterday I spoke to a past client of mine who had a really tough experience. He got remarried. They had a child, and the child didn't survive. And when all this was going on, you know, one of the questions I asked him was, well, what was going on in your brain? He said, my question was, how strong do you think I am?
Yeah.
Like, like, really, what are you doing here? And it's like almost a question to God. Like, how much can I handle? How tough? I'm begging for mercy here, and I'm not receiving it. And so how strong do you think I am? And the truth is that we're all a whole lot stronger than we can ever imagine and live through, you know, the world's greatest nightmares. And those who survive and those who thrive not only live through them, but live to tell the story and live to tell the story of how that experience brought them to this point, how that was a stop on their journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the saying, you know, life's not happening to you, it's happening for you. And when you start approaching everything as, you know, okay, this is very challenging and very difficult, this is adversity, I can either, you know, you only lose when you quit kind of thing, right? I can either lay down and give up, or I can, you know, get back up and start. How do I understand, really look to try and understand the reason this is happening? How can I grow, and how can I continue and know that it's just one more step in my ultimate success? It's inevitable as long as I don't quit and continue to believe in myself and focus on the right things. And of course, you talk a lot about thought management as an important element. Can you speak a little bit about that?
So the idea is that a lot of people have no understanding, no consciousness about how their thoughts work and what their thoughts are doing, right? And so my job is to help people understand the connection between the way you think and the outcomes or the results you're getting, and start to make conscious decisions to shift your thinking towards your goals rather than live in this state of oblivion. So that's my job. And a lot of that is connected to, what do I believe to be true? And how did I acquire these beliefs? Because we walk around with a whole bunch of beliefs that are really deposited to us from childhood, from others, from the media, from our parents, from all kinds of places that we don't really have the opportunity often to examine and challenge and select strategically. So my job also is to bring forth or uncover the beliefs that people have and help them determine whether or not those beliefs are really causing a slowdown for them or causing a state of paralysis, as opposed to helping them really move forward and achieve the goals they set for themselves.
Right, right. Yeah, it's... I definitely am big on paying attention. You have so many thoughts in a day. If you can just look at, you know, really become the observer of what those thoughts are and how many are sort of poor me, I can't do it, you know, limiting beliefs. It's, you know, we truly are, as cliche as it sounds, you know, our only obstacle, the only limit is our own minds.
Well, and, you know, we do have other limits, right? We have circumstantial, right, exactly. We have circumstantial limits. We have financial limits. We have limits of time. We have all kinds of real, actual limits, except all of those can be worked with. We can find solutions, right? Like, we placed people on the moon, right? There was a solution for that. We figured that out. We can figure out how to solve problems only if our mind allows us to. And so while there are real limits everywhere else, we can work with those only if we give ourselves permission to focus on solving the problems. If we have decided that it's impossible, that's an impossible problem to solve, well, then game over.
Yeah.
And so that's the linchpin in all of this.
Yeah. And it's like the 4 minute mile, or, you know, which I'm sure you know the story. No one could break it. No one could break it. One guy breaks it. Now, all of a sudden, everyone... you know, tons of people start breaking it. So it's a very interesting phenomenon when you start looking at the collective consciousness. And, you know, once the collective can start to shift, it's, you know, and you're probably familiar with the 100th monkey principle. And so it's really interesting. And it's what we talk about a lot on this show is, you know, consciousness and how it's all connected and you know, how important it is to every time we sort of think there's a limit somehow, some way, it ultimately ends up being overcome, you know, to some degree. I mean, obviously, no one's learned how to fly from here to the moon yet without any help. But maybe 1,000 years from now, or 100 years, or you know, of course, using their consciousness to do such things. I mean, there's always some kind of way. And I guess a question I would have for you: what do you think is the biggest difference between those who end up creating really extraordinary lives and those who don't? Would you say it's sort of this resilience and ability to deal with adversity?
Well, absolutely. It's a resilience and ability to deal with adversity. And it's a deep, deep desire and a high degree of drive. You know, you have that combination. What I find is a lot of people are driven, except that a lot of people don't really understand how to harness their drive. And so what we find is highly driven people who are using a lot of energy, being frustrated, spinning their wheels, and in a state of internal chaos. And what I want to do is bring them to a place of calm and peacefulness and really help them leverage their drive and point them in the right direction so that their energy yields the results they're looking for, as opposed to frustrating outcomes.
Yeah. Are you a big advocate of, you know, like, what are some of the techniques? Like, I'm assuming maybe meditation. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I love meditation. I'm a believer in meditation, but I don't think meditation comes easily or naturally to a lot of people. Why? Because we weren't born, you know, as young children knowing how to meditate. Now, maybe times have changed. Maybe more young people are learning how to meditate, but certainly when I was young, it wasn't a thing. What was a thing was I was taught how to read and write. And so for me, I leverage that thing. And what I do when I coach people is I ask them to journal in an online journal. And what I do is I ask them to journal on a daily basis, every single day. And every time they journal, their journal comes back to me as their coach. I have a team of coaches, but in this case, it would be me. And I read and I respond to their journal. So we're in dialogue every single day, examining their thoughts, examining their stories, examining their perspectives, examining how they experience whatever's coming their way, positive and negative, and really using all that data. Again, I'm a very big believer on collecting data, but examining that data to understand the patterns that people fall into, the triggers that they that they encounter on an ongoing basis, and to see how their thinking is oriented. One of the biggest mistakes I find, perhaps in the world of coaching or in the world in general, is when you're not happy with the way your life goes, what happens? Like, what goes on in your mind? Well, if I don't like the way things are, I got to do something different, right? I got to take an action that brings me to a different place. And unfortunately, when you're in a state of frustration, your actions, even if they feel like positive actions, aren't going to lead to a necessarily positive outcome.
Yep, I would agree.
Right? Yeah. And so what I want to do is have people stop for a minute. Like, just stop doing. Like, stop.
Yeah.
And first orient your thinking. Stop being frustrated. Get to a good place and then start doing. And very often that middle step, or what I would call the first step, is skipped over.
Yeah.
And so people are literally on this treadmill spinning their wheels, trying to get to this new destination from an old thinking place. And that can never happen, at least not with any great ease.
Yeah. Tony Robbins talks about this very thing, changing your state, how important it is, you know, state that you're in. And I definitely agree with that, because so many people are doing things external to make a difference. And this is, of course, something we talk about a lot on the show. It's not so much what you're doing out there. It's sort of out there is more of a reflection of your internal state. So it's not happening out there. And so when you go to the source, which is your internal, you know, what sort of vibrational pool am I playing in? Where am I resonating? Because like energy is going to attract like energy. And, you know, so it's the most important thing a person can do is really manage their thoughts. And then, of course, you get into some things, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Bruce Lipton's work or not. You know, he wrote The Biology of Belief, and very fascinating guy. I had him on the show a month or so ago, and he talked about, you know, one of the big problems, and I'm curious if what you think about this, is, you know, we have this subconscious programming that happens in the first, I believe it's 7 years of our life or 6 years of our life. So a lot of times people are operating off of this subconscious programming that was sort of installed, you know, this program that was installed in them all these, you know, decades ago. And it's, you know, so then they're thinking consciously, but it's making such a small effect on this underlying subconscious programming, and why it's really important to kind of dig down and sort of work on rewriting that.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, certainly we have programming that exists in the first 7 years of our lives, but that doesn't end after 7 years. It continues on and on and on throughout all of our experiences, through every interaction we have. And what happens is, I use the word deposit, we receive unconscious deposits of beliefs. And we don't often have the ability to sort through those deposits and determine which of those beliefs even makes sense. But we take them on and we own them and we carry them around. It's like we put rocks in our pockets and we continue to collect these rocks. And no kidding, we're tired. And no kidding, our shoulders hurt. And no kidding, we have a backache, right? And no kidding, all of these things, because we just keep collecting these rocks. And I don't see very often people taking the rocks out and going, geez, like, these aren't even pretty. I don't even see any of them that I want to keep.
Right. They're not even crystals.
They're not even anything. They're just rocks.
Yeah. Right?
Like, at least let me take them and go to a pond and see if I can skip them. But that's not what people are doing. They just keep collecting their rocks.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like carrying around baggage. It's like, you know, I've heard it said, you know, take out the trash, or, you know, it's like carrying around trash. You have all the stuff you've picked up, and then these stories that we tell, and then you don't, so few people realize this is just a story and it means something. It does have an effect on your life because you've determined that it has an effect on your life. But really, when you look at what's happening now, there is no past. You can't show it to me, right? You can tell me about it, but I don't see it. The future never is going to come exactly like you anticipate it. And if you move into the now, it's like in any now, you're always okay. You've always dealt with it. It may not have always been pleasant. It may not have always been peaceful, or you might not have always felt happy, but you can choose to sort of be at peace with anything by realizing this too shall pass. I can get through this, and I don't have to drag around these stories that, you know, happened to me 2 years ago or 20 years ago or what have you. And I think if you can just sort of bring everything to this moment and realize, you know, every moment's another chance to turn it all around, right? I literally born anew.
Yeah, and it's not only that people are bringing stories with them that occurred in the past, that they are doing that, but it's not only that. They're bringing stories with them that could occur in the future, and they're right. inventing stories and creating fear and worry and paranoia. You know, like, mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. I'm working with a client. She's unbelievably amazing in so many ways, and you know, for her, her sense of worth is attached to how much she produces, her productivity levels, right? So right. if she's unproductive, that's a bad day. If she's unproductive, yeah. not only is it a bad day, now that's more, you know, gives her a good enough reason to be in a bad mood. So this is an escalating problem, right? So
yeah,
she's
right.
happy if she's productive, and she's even happier if she's productive and other people acknowledge her productivity and her contribution. So she's in this right. trap. Right. And yep. and so we're exploring the idea of, well, like, what if you stop being productive in that way and start thinking about what's my best contribution instead of just doing everything? Right. Think yeah. about what is the one. And she said, I'm afraid. I said, well, what are you afraid mm-hmm. of? She said, well, if I stop doing all the things that I'm doing, then I'm going to go to my default setting. And I said, well, what's your default setting? She said, to be lazy, uninformed, and what was the last word? Hmm. Uninformed and useless.
Yeah.
And I said, really? Like, that's sheer bullshit. You just made that up. And that's what we do, is we make things up all the time.
Yeah.
And we assign truth to things that are absolutely fictitious.
Right.
Right? And we own that as a belief. We take that on. More rocks.
Yeah, you know, more exactly. Rocks. Exactly. It's like we can be so you know, unfair and unrealistic even with ourselves. It's like someone who's that productive to go swing so hard the other way is very unlikely, right? I mean, you don't, yeah. it doesn't mean you've got to be Superwoman all day, every day. Or if you're not, you're going to be, you know, this blob of lethargic right. mess. I mean,
exactly.
And so why tell that story or even better, realize that you are controlling what's happening, and that's a choice. Life's not happening to you. You're deciding. So how yes. about I decide that I'm going to take control and I'm going to do this in between, you know,
right.
whatever that may, you know,
right.
whatever the state is, that would feel really good.
But this is it. It's that the unconscious mind has such a big, powerful impact on our day-to-day operations, and we have no awareness of the relationship between our unconscious or subconscious thoughts and our behaviors. And so my yeah. role, my job, is to bring people's awareness to that connection and have them choose consciously, like, which direction do you want to go? You know, asking right. a question, asking a simple question, what do you want? Boy, people get really stuck with that, right?
Yeah.
I'll give you another example. I had another client, and he came to me, and I said, well, what do you want? He said, I want to lose a bunch of weight. I said, well, describe that. He goes, well, when I go to the gym, I don't want my belly to jiggle. I'm like, great. That tells me what you don't want, but tell me what you do want now.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. It's a great point. So many people focus on what they don't want and wonder why they keep getting more of it. It's like where attention goes, energy flows. It's
right.
I personally believe one of the best things you can do if you don't want something is to give it no attention and to, you know, focus on exactly what you just said. What do you want? Let's put our attention and energy there
right.
instead of drumming up the vibration of that which we don't want to see more of.
Exactly. And part of the challenge is that people don't know how to define what they want. They don't know how to stay focused on what they want.
Yeah.
And sometimes they may have a momentary kind of a moment of clarity where they can define it and state it and express it. And then it fades like a day or two later.
Yeah.
They forget.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's a great thing that you bring up. And I've had several listeners contact me, and I can even say in my own life, you know, focus is, you just touched on, it's a big one, you know, where to focus. You know, you can do anything. You just can't do everything. And how does one figure out where to focus? What would your answer to that be?
Well, what is it that you do and that when you're doing it, you're totally lit up, engaged, happy, feeling great, mm-hmm. you know, energized? What is that thing? Do more yep. of that.
Yeah. Such a simple way to cut right to it, right? Following your bliss, finding that thing that really lights you up. That's sort of your soul navigation of where you're meant to be, you know. And for me, you know, talking about stuff like this, talking about the ultimate nature of reality, talking about, you know, how self-improvement. I get very lit up. I always say it's like the best natural high ever. I know that's my path to some degree. And I suppose everyone has a different thing that lights them up, and we're all with different personalities and so forth. But yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice just to cut through it all. What lights you up the most, and find a way to do more of that.
Exactly. Exactly. And without guilt, of course, without guilt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Guilt is, talk about carrying chains around with you or baggage or stones. That's one, you know, and of course you get people, the other thing they'll get sometimes is people who write in who's like, look, you know, I hear what you're saying. I hear all this, you know, sort of positive, upbeat, you know, what I give attention to is so important, but I just can't shake depression. I mean, what kind of advice do you give someone who is, and I'm sure you get it, who's like chronically depressed?
Well, I get people who have some depression. I get people who have, you know, anger issues. I get people who have all kinds of things. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. And if it's something that needs medical treatment, I advise on that. But if somebody
like
has depression,
going camping,
but if it's someone who tends to feel somber on an ongoing basis, if it's someone who just tends to feel that low feeling, what I do is I say, so let's examine that. Where does that low feeling come from? But I also give them a framework to work with and help them understand that their low feeling has nothing to do with what's happening around them. So for me, when I start coaching people, and this is really important, before I even have a first call with them, I'm asking them to journal every day for a week, even before we start coaching. Why? Because I'm trying to get a baseline. I'm trying to get an understanding of their mood. What is their trigger? You know, what's happening and how do they feel about what's happening? And that helps me understand where their mood comes from. And typically, mood is associated with circumstance. And then when I get to the first call, I help them understand actually where their mood comes from, that it has nothing to do with circumstance. And so what I'm giving them is a framework to work with. I'm giving them a set of tools that they can then take and apply to other things that happen throughout the period of our coaching. So, you know, in terms of depression, I help them understand. So they might say, here are the reasons why I'm depressed. I'm not working. I'm overweight. I have no money. They may give me all the circumstantial reasons. And the moment I say, okay, you know, those are your circumstances. I understand how those circumstances can have you thinking in ways that make you feel bad, but understand that it's not the circumstances that are causing you to feel down. It's your thinking. And guess what? Yep. You may not have control over your money and you may not have control over your job right here this second, but you do have control over your thinking and you're not even owning that. So let's work with that first. Let's give you control, because depression comes from a sense of lack of control.
Right.
Right. So if I help people learn how to take control of the thing they have control over, depression lifts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such an empowering, you know, moment when you understand that I am not my circumstances. Happiness perspective is a choice. I'm literally creating. I can make it up that the best thing ever is that I have very little money. I could, you know, I mean, obviously that's an extreme way to put it, right? But you can find some of the happiest souls are dirt poor, right? And then you have filthy rich people that are just super miserable in a better part of town, you know? So it is definitely, you know, I always kind of put it like this. One of my favorite books, Conversations with God, talks about this. It's like most people do something like work in order to have something like money in order to be something like happy. But the problem is the way reality works, it's the opposite. You be the thing that you want happy, and then you'll find yourself doing and having the things that make you happy. The external is a mirror reflection of the internal state.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so when you realize it's not happening out there, there is no out there. You're actually happening to it. And this is, you know, this is something that we geek out on the show all the time. The ultimate nature of reality. What's going on here? We're, you know, is this a holographic reality? You know, and I'm curious with, you know, in your case, what is your perspective, you know, on the ultimate nature of reality? What the heck do you think's going on here?
I'm in agreement with you. I think that everything you see, everything you touch, everything you smell, everything you hear is a reflection of your mental state, your thinking, your internal processing, everything. And you and I and 10 other people can be looking at the same thing and experience it completely differently. And that is a reflection of what's happening for us. You know, I often use the example of American Idol. You know how it works. Like at the end, mm-hmm. there are 10 people who are left, and one by one, one gets kicked off the show. And every time they get kicked off the show, the person who gets kicked off reacts differently. One person cries, one person, you know, comes back up and they sing their hearts out better than they've ever sung before. Some people feel relief. It's the same event happening to, in this case, 9 different people, but there's a mm-hmm. different reaction, and the different reaction is a function of their mental processing. Right. For some people, they realize like this was the greatest opportunity of my life and my career has just started. For other people, they feel like big failures. And and the event isn't different. It's exactly the same. It's the same event.
Ah, yeah. That's a great example. I really like that because it is. It's not what's happening. It's how you're choosing to see what's happening.
Exactly. And,
yeah. So in your perspective, to dig in a little bit more on your perspective on the ultimate nature of reality or your spirituality, is that something that is any piece of your coaching? I mean, is that something that is, you know, what is your spiritual life like? How does that factor in?
Yeah. So I have a pretty personally a rich spiritual life, and I, you know, mm-hmm. I do my thing. I wake up and I have conversations with, you know, whoever I feel is that higher spiritual mm-hmm. Source, et cetera. But when I coach people, while there's a very huge spiritual perspective. And what I do is I translate that spiritual perspective into something very tangible. I'm working with executives. I'm working with entrepreneurs. I'm working with that highly driven population who is normally looking at tangible indicators of success. Things mm-hmm. like revenue, things like profitability, things like sustainability of the client life, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we're looking at those tangible aspects, and I'm coming to them and bringing them something completely intangible. So I try my best to speak their language. I try my best to take these concepts and wrap them up, package them in a way so that they understand it and can apply it to their setting. So I'm not taking them so far out of their current way of looking at life. And at the same time, I'm opening things up for them and depositing a much more, let's call it a spiritual or much more open-minded way of looking at things.
Right.
Right. So I'm not, you know, cracking them open and leaving them going, what the heck just happened to me? I don't even believe in this stuff. It's too out there. It's too woo-woo. I don't do that. Yeah. Right. So I work within their parameters and I slowly expand their thinking. I slowly introduce ideas over time and get them mm-hmm. used to it. So it's not, it's not like throwing someone into a cold pool at all.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I really, you know, I'm a big follower and fan of, you know, what's happening in science, quantum physics. It's because it really is like, you know, science and spirituality are sort of doing this dance now. And we're seeing, you know, how consciousness, the observer actually affects, you know, particles and determines, you know, when consciousness is not present, it's in a state of quantum superposition. So particles are in multiple places at once. When consciousness is present, it sort of snaps into one place. And I love that because it really shows how the observer creates reality. And it's, they're just such a fascinating merging. So I've found when I'm dealing with someone who's very sort of analytical and, you know, material world based, and I can relate to that, especially dealing with other entrepreneurs or, you know, business minds and things like that, is kind of when you can show the science of what's happening in and how it sort of supports some of these concepts that otherwise may seem woo-woo to them, you know.
Right. Like if one of my clients heard you just now in the last 3 minutes of your speech, mm-hmm. they'd say, I don't know what the heck he's talking about. Right. But and at the same time, like I was on this other podcast a couple of days ago, and the podcaster kept saying, but what is the measurement of success? What is the, like, he's looking for me to say, well, my measurement of success is revenue, but it's not. My measurement of success is, you know, revenue is the side effect. Then my measurement of success is seeing the transformation that people experience. It's looking at their evaluations. It's looking at their journals on day one and comparing them, 10 weeks later, for example. It's looking at the way they handle conflict or adversity on day one versus how they handle it on day 70, et cetera, right? So I'm looking at those things, and he wasn't happy with that. Right? He's like, but what's the tangible? What is the measurement? I want a number.
Right.
And what was really funny for me was that at the end of it, I heard him and I thought to myself, my clients think like him. I need to find some kind of number, like just so that they understand, like, so that's the entry point and it's not the end point. You know, it's about speaking the language of your clients and then introducing them to a whole new world.
Yeah, well, you know, what they don't realize is the path is the goal. The journey is the goal. And, you know, it's all about, you know, what you're experiencing along the way. It's not, once you arrive, it's kind of like Christmas morning versus Christmas Eve as a kid. Which is better? I don't know. I would probably say Christmas Eve, right? The journey up to it, the expectation, the, you know, what's going to happen and what's happening along the way, as opposed to, okay, now I'm here, now what, right? Jim Carrey says it best. I love how he, you know, he talks a lot about this sort of subject, and he says, I wish everyone could make it big so they could see that's not where it's at. Getting to that big number or that big success, it's you know, what are you experiencing along the way, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
So this is, before I move, I was about to ask a question, but I'm going to hold off on that for a second. I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, because you mentioned journaling, of course, being a big part of how you work with your clients. And I think that's really fascinating. So as opposed to having direct conversation like this, you're actually documenting that process. And I think
I'm doing
sorry,
both.
Go ahead.
I'm doing both.
Okay.
Okay, I have a call on a weekly basis. Every call is recorded. Mm-hmm. I want my clients to listen to the recording so they can start to hear how they show up. They could hear the words they use, the tone they use, the story they tell. They can start to pick up their own patterns, and their consciousness becomes increased with regards to how they think and how their thinking is affecting their outcomes. So that's part one. Part two is their journaling every day. So it's a combination of journaling and one-on-one coaching calls.
Interesting. Now, and we'll, of course, we'll leave the audience with how they can contact you if they're interested in perhaps going down that road. But would you recommend for those, you know, kind of on their own, that sort of any kind of technique for how to do this themselves and, you know, kind of get
how
feedback?
How to journal on your own? Sure. So there are a couple of things I recommend. I'll recommend three things, okay? Recommendation number one is that when you journal, there's a technique that I recommend called dump, dump, and then dump the dump. And so what is that? It means if there's something going on for you, write it down. And if you think you're done, keep going so that it's all expelled. So it's out of your body, out of your mind, out of your system, and you're releasing the stress. If something's bothering you, write it down. But then at some point, like, you don't want to leave it on a bad note. You want to say, okay, it's time to turn myself around. And at that point, you want to start to think about, what do I want instead of this? Like, where am I going? What would I like to have? How would I like to feel? And you, and so the purpose of that is this constant redirection, that you're building a muscle of redirecting or pivoting towards where you want to go, what you want for yourself. So that's one methodology of journaling. Another methodology of journaling is to ask yourself a question. So what do I want to ask myself today? Sometimes, and work on that question for the day, whatever that question is. Where do I want to be in 5 years from now? Whatever that question is. The third thing that I want to suggest is one of the things that we do for some of our clients is we provide them with a self-guided journaling program. It's called FOM Essentials, FOM for Frame of Mind Essentials. And in that program, they get a journaling prompt every 3 days. Why every 3 days? Because I don't think you can fully explore a question in a day. You have some time to think and process and really, you know, kind of sit in that question for a bit. So we do it every 3 days, and up to twice a month, you can send your journal in to a coach for review. In addition to that, you get me on a podcast who's looking at different cases and scenarios and providing some coaching. And typically those scenarios are the kind of scenarios that would apply to absolutely anybody. So when you're listening to that coaching, it's like you're receiving coaching yourself.
Right.
So that's a third option. FOM Essentials. It's fairly affordable on a monthly basis, and you get to journal in a community. That's the other thing, so that you're not sitting there in isolation.
Wonderful. I love that. So, question I'd love to ask, to just switch gears a little bit. As my listeners know, I'm a huge fan of stories of synchronicity or serendipity or positive paranormal stories, and curious if you have something juicy for us.
Sure. So I am married and divorced and remarried, but let me tell you the story. So, while I was divorced, I had two children. And we shared custody, but on this one particular day in May, it was my son's birthday, and we decided to take a whole bunch of his friends downtown to see an improv show. It was wonderful. It was great. My ex-husband was there with his girlfriend, and whatever it was there, it was a little tense, but okay. We went, and at the end of that evening, I took a bunch of kids home with me. All of a sudden, I got a call from one of the parents, "Where's my son?" And what happened was I forgot one of the kids behind downtown.
Oh, wow.
Roaming the streets, right? And I felt so bad, like the blood drained from my body because I'm a mom. Like, could you imagine leaving a kid behind?
I remember my mom did this with my sister's friend, and one of the biggest fights I remember my parents getting into. No, my dad did it actually. Sorry, when I was like 5 years old or something, was revolved around the same kind of thing. So yeah, I remember that horror of that.
So I right away called my ex-husband, and his wife answered, and she reamed me in. Like, she just yelled at me, "What kind of mother are you? How can you do such a thing?" And like, I already felt bad, but now I was getting an extra beating, right? Like, it just was a terrible thing. And I said, you know, can I speak to my ex-husband? He got on the phone. I said, "Are you still downtown?" "Yes." I said, "Can you please stay with this child until his parents come and pick him up?"
Wow.
And yes, no problem. Okay. But meanwhile, I had to drive all the way home, and I was just replaying the scene over and over and over and over and over again in my head. And I was like literally sick to my stomach. I felt so bad. Like, I had committed the biggest crime on earth. And I got home.
How old was the kid?
The kid was, let's say, 10.
Okay.
10 sounds around right. So, I dropped all the kids at home. Everybody went into their spaces. My kids went to bed, and I was lying down on my bed, and I couldn't get this out of my mind. And finally I said, "So, if I were my own client, what would I do? Like, what would I say?" And I'd say, you know, like, try to think about something else. Try to think about something that makes you feel a little bit better. So I decided to try that. And I launched into this imaginary story where I get a call from this guy. In my dream, in my imagination, the guy's name is Jake, but he calls me and he says, "Hey, I got your name from so-and-so and so-and-so, and they told me that I absolutely needed to meet you, that my life wouldn't be the same once I met you, and that, you know, it was a, you know, a divine thing that we had to meet." And it was so real, like that interaction, that phone interaction in my brain was so real that I literally laughed out loud. And like a couple of days later, I was on the phone driving to a speaking engagement, not too far, but, you know, maybe an hour away, driving to a speaking engagement. I picked up the phone and called one of my friends, and I told him about this particular imagination, this story, this vision I had. And I went to the presentation. I did the presentation, and on my way home, I checked my phone, and I get this message from this guy.
Oh.
His name happens to be Alan. And I listened to the message. "Hi, my name is Alan. I got your name from, you know, these two people that we happen to know. And they said that I should call you and that maybe we should go on a date." And I was floored because it was so similar. It was so similar.
Right.
Like, just days later, it was almost identical to this, you know, funny dream I conjured up. And so I called him back and I said, "You won't believe what just happened." And I told him the story. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, "Oh my God, I just blew it. Like, the guy must think I'm nuts." Right? Like, he must think I'm off the wall insane. And he's like, "Well, do you want to go out on Saturday night?" I said, "I would love to, except that I'm going to be in Ohio and I'm not going to be flying home until late. I can go on a later date." He said, "Well, what time are you arriving?" I said, "Around 6. He goes, "Well, how about if I pick you up at the airport?" I was like, "Wow, like, who does that? It's a blind date, right?"
Yeah.
Right? And I said, "Sure, let's do that." And so now, remember, at this point, I'm single. I fly a lot for work. I'm traveling. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I come home. And every time I come home to all these other people waiting for someone else, right? So it's a very lonely experience. And so using my imagination, I imagine a crowd of people holding up a sign with my name. And that feels a little better, right? Like I use my imagination. And I get out of the plane on my way home from Ohio, and there's this guy, Alan, with a sign and my name on it. I'm like, this is just so weird. Like, it's just so weird. Well, suffice it to say, he never left. And we've been married now for the past 7.5 years.
Wow, that's so awesome. That is a great, great story. Thank you so much for sharing that.
That's synchronicity.
Yes, yes, for sure. Definitely some serendipity. And it's really interesting. I loved how you talked about using your imagination, because I think that's a huge point. I always say it's our most powerful tool that we've been told is bad from the time we were little and repressed. And meanwhile, it's the most powerful tool to sort of tap into our creative, you know, creativity and spirit and manifestation and all these things. I mean, the amount of stories I have of people who've had visions of things that then happen, or even in my own life, I mean, it just is a constant flow. And for so many other people who aren't open and aren't using their imagination, it's sort of, you know, magic is, you know, not real for them in any way. Like these sorts of things, it's like, it's a joke, right? Because they're never having those sorts of experiences. So I think opening your imagination and being playful like that is one of the most important things that a person can do, in my opinion.
I agree with you. Yeah, and a lot of people use their imagination to imagine negative outcomes. And so if you have that kind of imagination, like, use it to imagine good stuff. Like, at least, you know, invent the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a post the other day. Actually, I reposted it because I loved it so much. It said, "Disbelief in magic can force a poor soul into believing in government and business."
There you go.
So, well, Kim, this has been absolutely fascinating to pick your brain. So much goodness you've left us with to ponder here. What's the best way for audience to contact you?
Best way is go to frameofmindcoaching.com, check out the site. There's an assessment on the site that I encourage anybody who's listening to take. And that assessment allows you to see where your thinking is oriented. Where am I now? Am I pointed in the right direction? If for anybody who's interested in personal development, it's probably the single most important starting point is just to understand where you are. So I encourage everybody to do that. And then, you know, look around. I'm everywhere. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm on YouTube. Google me, Kim Addis.
Kim Addis. Well, last question for Kim Addis. 60 seconds or less. What is the meaning of life according to Kim Addis?
The meaning of life or the purpose of life? Is that the same thing?
Either or.
Okay. So for me, the purpose of life is to milk it. It's to extract as much joy, as much pleasure, as much laughter, as much good feeling out of life that it has to offer. It's the same question as what's the purpose of going to an amusement park? Same answer.
Love it. Wonderful answer. Wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here on the show. And, yeah, keep up the amazing work.
Thank you so much. It was absolutely so much fun to talk to you. I really appreciated the conversation.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that concludes this week's interview episode. If you have enjoyed this positive download, please take a minute, give us a rating or review on iTunes. Since iTunes is the holy grail of all things podcasting, your good reviews help us to reach more listeners. Also, we would be extremely appreciative if you would tell your friends and family about the show. Our sincere intent with the Positive Head podcast is to spread positivity to the world because we're selfish, quite honestly. I say that jokingly, but really only halfway joking. I'm referring to the good kind of selfish based on the knowing that we all get what we give in this life, because when we give, we're actually always giving to extensions of self, since we're all really one in the same consciousness, just in different bodies. So if you want to be a good selfish along with us by helping to spread the positivity, by all means, please proceed to shout about the Positive Head podcast from your rooftop. Otherwise, as you continue on your fabulous journey in this 3D reality, be sure to remember this. As long as you ain't dead, you're already positive ahead. Journey well, everyone, and thank you for being.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.